Good morning, church.
Good morning.
I never get tired of telling you. I hope you don't get tired of me telling you that I love you and I appreciate you. Your presence, your participation, whether you're online or you're here with us in person, your presence and participation is an encouragement to everyone here. Hope is something that we do together. Hope is a collective activity. So thank you. Thank you for being here to hope with us. That's what we're talking about this month in this series. We're talking about the idea of hope. And I think that as we think about hope, maybe some of the related words that are first to come to our mind are things like hopeful or maybe hopeless. We tend to think about hope, I think, as a noun, as something we have. We think about having hope, or maybe we think about hope as something we used to have, and then we lost our hope. But I think it's important to realize that hope is not just a noun. It is a noun. It can be something that we have, but it's not just that. It's not just a mood that we're in. It's not just something that we have or something that we feel. Hope is also a verb, which means that hope is something we do. Hope is something that we do. It is a choice we make to intentionally hope. It isn't just something that we have. It isn't just something that we feel. It's not something that is determined by our situation or our circumstances. See, that's what I'm afraid of, is that when we think about hope as just something, as being a mood that we're in, a feeling that we have, something that sort of comes and goes, something that we have, and then it goes away as easily as it came, then we think that our circumstances, our situations, or maybe our personalities determine whether or not we have hope. We think some people are just hopeful people and other people maybe not so hopeful, or maybe this is a situation in which I can be hopeful and this other situation is a situation in which I can't be hopeful. But when we think about hope as a verb, as something that we do, we realize that we can and we should always be hoping. This is something that we can always do. But like with anything that you do, you can do it well, you could do it poorly, or you could choose not to do it at all. And so I think we need to ask ourselves, how do we hope? How do we hope? How do we hope? Maybe there's some of us that we don't know how to hope because nobody ever told us that we should be hoping, that this is something that we do. No one ever says, this is how you hope. This is how you exercise hope. Maybe some of us don't hope well because we don't know how to express hope. We don't know how to exercise our hope. Maybe some of us don't hope well. Maybe some of us don't hope at all because we're afraid of being disappointed. That's the thing with hope, isn't it? That one reason we don't hope is because we think we might be, we're afraid we might be disappointed. Others of us might not hope because maybe we don't feel like we have a right to hope. We think maybe other people have a right to hope in God, but maybe because of guilt and shame, because of what we've done, because of the choices that we've made or the life that we've lived, we're afraid we don't have a right to hope. Or maybe others of us, we don't know how to hope because we don't know what we're supposed to be hoping for. What is it that we're supposed to be hoping for? And so I believe that the Psalms are given to us to teach us how to hope and how to hope well. That's what the Psalms, so many of them, are all about. So if you have your Bible, let's look at Psalm chapter 63. This isn't on the screen, but the title of this psalm that you might read in your Bible says something like, a psalm of David when he was in the wilderness of Judah. This is a psalm that David probably wrote when he was driven out of Jerusalem by a rebellion. Can you imagine being driven out of your home, being driven out of your kingdom by rebels, especially when those rebels are led by your son? That's probably what's going on here. Absalom, the son of David, has driven David and his people out of the city, and he's been driven out into the wilderness. But I, I want us to realize that when you read titles like that in the Psalms, that we're not just reading David's personal journal. That's not why those titles are given to us. These Psalms are not just there because this is how David was feeling, and this is just about David and his situation and his circumstances. These Psalms were given to Israel and passed down year after year, generation after generation, century after century, to teach God's people how to worship, how to lament, how to express what they're going through, how to trust in God, and how to hope. So when we read Psalms like this, we tend to say things like, this Psalm gives us hope, as if it's just something that happens passively, as if it happens by osmosis, it just sinks into us. I prefer to say it teaches us how to hope. So if you want to know how to hope, listen to the words of David. He says, "Oh God, you are my God. Earnestly, I seek you. My soul thirsts for you. My flesh faints for you, as in a dry and weary land where there is no water." Now, again, David is probably in a wilderness, both literally and metaphorically. Literally driven out of the city, literally driven into the Judean wilderness, but also metaphorically, he feels like he is far away from God. And chances are, you have been through a situation like that, or you will go through a situation like that. Many of you may feel like you're in a situation like that right now. But the good news is, that is when you hope. In fact, that is the only time you can hope. You cannot hope when you're comfortable. You cannot exercise hope when you're comfortable. You cannot exercise hope when everything is exactly the way you want it to be. You can only exercise hope when you are in a painful situation. Again, as we've been saying, hope is for people who have problems. It's just like exercising your body. I hate to break it to you, but you can't exercise your body on your couch or in your recliner. You can't exercise your body when you're comfortable. You can only exercise when it's painful. Hope is for moments that hurt. Hope is for moments that are hard. Hope is for moments like this, where you feel like you are far away from God, where you're in the midst of a wilderness, whether it's literally or metaphorically. That's when you hope. That's when you express this. And how do you hope? What do you hope for? Listen to what David says. He says, "Oh God, you are my God. Earnestly I seek you. My soul thirsts for you. My flesh faints for you." You. This is how you hope. This is the person for whom you hope. As we've said since the beginning of this series, we hope in God. We hope for God. God is the object of our hope. We don't just hope for the gift. We hope for the giver. David's hope is for God, is to experience the presence of God. He doesn't just want his situation to change. He wants to experience the presence of God. And if we're going to hope well, this is how we hope well. We hope for the presence of God. We desire the presence of God. We thirst for the presence of God. We hunger for the presence of God. We long for, we faint for, every fiber of our being longs for the presence of God. But is that how you hope? Sometimes we just hope for a change in circumstance, a change in situation. And of course we want that. Of course we want a better situation. Of course we want a better circumstance, but we don't know what tomorrow holds. But we know who God is. And because David knows who God is, and again, this isn't just about David's relationship with God. It is about David teaching Israel, and by extension, teaching us who have been grafted into Israel, teaching us how to hope, not just hope for a gift from God, not just hope in what God can give to us, not just hope for a change in situation or a change in circumstance, but hope for the presence of God, hunger for him, thirst for him, long for him, faint for him. Verse 2, he says, so I have looked upon you in the sanctuary, beholding your power and glory. David had been in the tabernacle. He had beheld, he had seen God's power. He had seen God's glory. He had experienced the presence of God, and he longed for that again. He longed to experience that again. Again, as we've been saying since the very beginning of this series, is that hope is where appreciation meets anticipation. Hope is looking back at the past and saying, I know who you are, God. I've seen you. I've seen your character. I've seen your power. I've seen your glory. I've seen that you're merciful and gracious and slow to anger and abounding in steadfast love. And I want to experience it again. David's not in the tabernacle right now. He can't see what he once saw. He's not experiencing what he once experienced, but he wants to again because he appreciates who he knows God is, and he anticipates seeing and experiencing God again. And chances are, you probably wouldn't be here if you hadn't also seen God's glory and seen God's power, haven't you? You can look back, whether in your own personal life or in the story of God's people, and you have seen how glorious he is, how powerful he is, how awesome he is. And you've probably had moments like that where you personally have experienced the glory and the power of God. Look back at those moments, appreciating who God has shown himself to be as you look forward and anticipate who God will continue to show himself to be. Verse 3, he says, because your steadfast love, your loyal love, your faithful love is better than what, church? Life. Your steadfast love is better than life. Because of that, my lips will praise you. So I will bless you as long as I live. In your name, I will lift up my hands. Your steadfast love is better than life. He doesn't just say it's better than water. That would be even amazing, wouldn't it? When you're thirsty, to say, I want water. I want my thirst quenched. I long for water. I desire water. When you're hungry, you desire food. You crave food. You long for food. But he doesn't say your steadfast love is better than water. It is better than water. He doesn't just say that. He doesn't just say your steadfast love is better than food. He says your steadfast love is better than life itself. It's better than everything. David wants to live, doesn't he? He's been driven out by rebels. And he wants to be delivered from the hand of his enemies. He wants to be restored. He wants his kingdom back. He wants his throne back. He wants his crown back. He wants to live. But he says more than that. I want the steadfast love of God. More than I want water. More than I want food. More than I want treasure or pleasure or power. I want the steadfast love of God. If you were to have a scale and put on one side everything that you are and everything that you have and everything that you will be and everything that you want and everything you desire, and on the other side of the scale you put the steadfast, loyal, faithful love of God, David says there's no contest. The steadfast love of God wins every time. But is that how you feel about him? Is that what you long for? Is that what you desire? When you're in the midst of a wilderness, when you're in the midst of a difficult situation, what are you longing for? A change in circumstance, of course. But would you say, but more than that, more than I want water to drink, more than I want food to eat, more than I want this situation to get better, I just want the steadfast love of God. Because here's the secret, church. If you hope for God's love, you will never be disappointed. Isn't that true? If you hope for God's love, you will never be disappointed. If you hope for food or drink or pleasure or treasure or power or anything else, as we've been talking about on Sunday mornings in our classes, it's all vapor. It's all a breath. It's all hevel, as the writer of Ecclesiastes puts it. It's gone like that. And if you hope for those things, whether you get it or not, you will eventually be disappointed. If you keep hoping for a change in circumstance, maybe that change never comes. Or maybe it does. But even if it does, it will never be as good as you think it will be. But if you hope for the steadfast love of God, His loyal love, His faithful love, is that if that's where you set your hopes and your desires and your longing and your thirst and your hunger, you will never be disappointed because His steadfast love is better than life. He says, verse 8, "My soul will be satisfied as with fat and rich food, and my mouth will praise you with joyful lips when I remember you upon my bed and meditate on you in the watches of the night, for you have been my help, and in the shadow of your wings I will sing for joy. My soul clings to you, your right hand upholds me." That passage right there, it encapsulates everything we've been talking about in regards to hope, doesn't it? That hope is where appreciation meets anticipation. You can see the way he looks back at the past and he says, "I remember, I meditate, you have been my help. I'm going to lay on my bed and I'm going to think about all of the wonderful, marvelous, faithful, loyal ways that you have been good to me and to your people. I'm going to remember. And because I remember, because I appreciate who you have been and what you have done, I anticipate that that's who you will continue to be. My soul will be satisfied. My mouth will praise you. In the shadow of your wings, I will sing for joy. Your right hand currently upholds me." How do I know that? How does David know that? That his soul will be satisfied. His mouth will praise him. In the shadow of God's wings, he will sing for joy because of who God has already proven himself to be. And these words are not just written so that David could express himself. These words are written so that God's people would learn this is the way you hope. You want to know how to hope? Listen to this. I told First Service when I was a kid, I don't know if this anybody remembers these tracing books when you wanted to learn how to draw something, you know what I'm talking about? They teach you how to draw a cartoon or something, and you would trace these pictures, and you learn how to draw by tracing these pictures. Trace these words. Learn how to hope by listening to words like this. Think back, remember, meditate on what God has done and who God has proven himself to be, and then anticipate God continuing to be exactly who he's proven himself to be. Verse 9, he says, "But those who seek to destroy my life shall go down into the depths of the earth. They shall be given over to the power of the sword. They shall be a portion for jackals." My enemies will lose. In spite of what it looks like right now, they will go down. They will not succeed. Church, we give too much credit to evildoers. We give too much credit to the wicked. We look around with our eyes and we say, "Oh, the wicked are prospering. Everything seems to work out for them. And the people that are mean and the people that are cruel and the people that cheat and the people that take advantage of others, the people that step on everybody else to get to the top, they always win and nice guys always finish last." You give way too much credit to them. Throughout the Psalms, the expectation, the hope, the confidence is that those who trust in the Lord, those who wait for the Lord, those who hope in the Lord, those who continue to do what's right will live forever, will succeed. And those who are wicked and evil, they will fail. Look at Psalm 37. Let's look at Psalm 37 and verse 1. This is an incredibly helpful reminder. The psalmist says, Fret not yourselves because of evildoers. Be not envious of wrongdoers. Some of us really need to hear that this morning, don't we? Stop worrying so much about how it seems like evildoers are winning or will win. Verse 2, for they will soon fade like the grass and wither like the green herb. Verse 3, he says, trust in the Lord and do good. Dwell in the land and befriend faithfulness. Delight yourself in the Lord and he will give you the desires of your heart. Again, when you hope in God's love, when you hope in God's faithfulness, when you hope in God's loyalty, you will not be disappointed. Because he is always faithful. He is always loyal. He is always who he has proven himself to be. Do good. Trust God. Wait. Because there is the temptation, the constant temptation to look around at other people and say, wow, if I really want to get ahead, if I really want to win, if I really want to succeed, I'm going to have to cut corners the way other people cut corners. I'm going to have to take a shortcut the way other people take a shortcut. I'm going to have to step on other people in order to get ahead because it looks like those people are winning. And the psalmist reminds us over and over again, the scriptures remind us over and over again, that is a false hope. Hope in the Lord. Trust in him. Verse 5, commit your way to the Lord. Trust in him and he will act. He will bring forth your righteousness as the light and your justice as the noonday. Verse 7, he says, be still before the Lord and wait patiently for him. Fret not yourself over the one who prospers in his way, over the man who carries out evil devices. Refrain from anger. Refrain from anger and forsake wrath. Fret not yourself, listen to this phrase, it tends only to evil. Stop right there for a second. When we sort of wring our hands and get so angry and upset and worried about how the evil people are winning and how the wicked people are prospering and how they're the only ones that get ahead and everything is falling apart, that anger, that frustration, that fretting, that worry, that anxiety, it leads to us doing the same sorts of things, doesn't it? It tends only to evil. It says verse 9, for the evildoers shall be cut off, but those who wait for the Lord shall inherit the land. Again, verse 10, in just a little while, the wicked will be no more. Though you look carefully at his place, he will not be there, but the meek shall inherit the land and delight themselves in abundant peace. This is the same promise that Jesus gives in the Beatitudes, isn't it? The meek will inherit the earth. Everything belongs to you. If you belong to Jesus, then everything belongs to you. If you trust in him, if you follow him, if you hope in him, if you intentionally hope in Jesus, then everything that belongs to Jesus by merit and by nature, because of who he is and what he's done, belongs to you by grace. All you have to do is wait, trust him, do good, follow Jesus, take up your cross, follow him. See, this is the only way that we can love our neighbors and even love our enemies. The only way we can turn the other cheek and go the extra mile, the only way that we can endure this persecution and mistreatment, the only way we can walk in the way of Jesus is if we hope. Not hope as a mood that we're either in or not in, not hope as something that we catch or lose, but hope as a conscious, intentional decision. I will hope in Jesus. And that means being confident that the evil will not succeed. Wickedness will not prosper. It doesn't matter what it looks like right now. Of course, from David's perspective at that moment, it looked like evil was going to win. And that's precisely when you need hope. That is the only time you can hope. That's when we exercise hope, is when everything looks dire. And everything looks like it's falling apart. We say, in spite of the way it looks, we believe that God will be victorious. In fact, Psalm 63, verse 11, it says this, but the king shall rejoice in God.
All who swear by him shall exult, for the mouths of liars will be stopped.
I think it's probably obvious what David means. He means, I'm coming back. I'm going to be on the throne again. I'm going to have my throne back. I'm going to have my kingdom back. I'm going to have my crown back. I will rejoice because I am God's anointed king. And God's anointed king, as long as he trusts in the Lord, cannot lose. That's how David looked at the situation. And everyone who gave their loyalty and allegiance to God would also succeed. And those who were liars, who swore falsely of their loyalty and allegiance, would be disappointed and they would fail. But now in Christ, this takes on a whole new meaning, doesn't it? Because Jesus, the great, 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 great grandson of David, the descendant of David, is the ultimate anointed king, the ultimate Messiah. And in spite of the fact that he was driven out by the rebellious, he was betrayed by the rebellious, he won. And he is winning. And he will win. The king shall rejoice in God. God's king will always win. And if you give your loyalty and allegiance to him, you win with him. God's people will always be victorious. This is the confidence that we have, the confidence that we maintain. And when we say this in the face of dire circumstances, when we say this in situations that seem hopeless, that is how we exercise hope. How do we hope? Here's what we do. Continually and confidently assert the expectation that God will keep his promises and God will prevail. That's how we hope. You want to hope? Here's how you hope. Continually, not just a one-time thing, but continually. Every time you worry, every time you're afraid, every time you begin to fret about all of the evil in the world, and there is evil in the world, things are dire sometimes. Things are dire on a global stage. Things are dire sometimes in your own life. But every time you're worried, every time you're afraid, choose to hope. Choose to continually and confidently assert this expectation. God will keep his promises and God will prevail. How do we assert that expectation? We assert it in prayer, don't we? It's okay to tell God, I don't like this situation. In fact, I hate it. It hurts. And I really wish this circumstance would change. Here's what I really want. Here's what I desire. But here's what I know. I also know, God, that your steadfast love is better than life. And what I really want to experience, what I really long for is you. I long for you. I desire you. And I am confident that you will always keep your promises and you will always prevail and wickedness will not win. You have been and are and always will be victorious. Assert that expectation in your prayer. Assert that expectation in your songs. That's why we sing, church. We don't just sing because we like the way it sounds. You may not like to sing. You may not enjoy singing. It doesn't really matter whether you enjoy it or not. This is how we hope. We hope by asserting this confident expectation. It's good for us. It is necessary for us. Again, if we think of hope as just something that comes and goes, something we don't have any control over or power over, a mood that we're in or we're not in, then we hope at all the wrong times. If we think that our hope is determined by our situation, then we think, well, this is a good situation, therefore I'm really hopeful. This is a bad situation, therefore I'm kind of feeling hopeless. That's exactly the opposite of when you need to be hoping. The worse the situation is, the more you need to exercise hope. The more you need to assert this expectation. God will prevail. God will keep his promises. Assert that expectation in your prayers, in your songs, in your conversations with one another. Sometimes we get together and unfortunately we pool our worries, don't we? We get together and we worry together. It's okay to express what you're concerned about, but don't let the opportunity pass. Don't let someone else walk away without you asserting this expectation. God will keep his promises. God will prevail. See, that's what we're committing to when we're baptized, isn't it? When we're baptized, we are saying to the Lord, I really believe that this is true. Your steadfast love is better than life. And so I give up my life. I die. And I'm buried with Jesus. I'm not going to live anymore. I'm going to be crucified with Jesus. Everything I hope for, everything I was, everything I have, I'm going to start over with this belief, with this trust, with this hope that your steadfast love is better than life. And so maybe there's somebody here this morning and you realize to your very heart, of your very core of your being, that God's love is better than life. And you want his love, his forgiveness, his mercy, his grace. And you want to hope in him from this point forward. Or maybe you've already made that commitment, but you need to recommit yourself to that truth, that reality. Recommit yourself to hoping in the Lord. Or maybe you're in the middle of a wilderness right now. As we said in the beginning, hope is best done in community. We hope collectively. Let us hope with you. Let us share hope with you. Let us encourage you to hope. Our shepherds would love to do that in the prayer room. They'd love to hope with you, pray with you, be a shoulder for you to cry on, or you can do that with your whole church family. As together we stand and sing this song.